So, I almost feel like I need to apologize to everybody before I start in, because I have never been this poorly prepared for a discussion topic in my entire life, and it's not for lack of trying. It's for lack of being able to answer my own question, because I have dug into this problem of mine, this thing that has been sort of my personal koan for the past year or so, and I don't have a great answer. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how I came to this question. And of course, the question, as is stated in the introduction there, is how to maintain motivation over the long haul through practice. And there's several podcasts that Domio has done on the subject, and I'm going to cite a couple of them. And in fact, I have a little excerpt that we're going to listen to out of one of them. And then after that, we're going to do little discussion groups, and hopefully everybody has lots of interesting things to say, because I'm counting on you to tell me how I'm going to get unstuck. Because that's selfishly why I picked this topic, is to pick your brains. So, why do we come to practice in the first place? I know why I came to practice in the first place, and I think that that probably applies to a lot of folks, and that is because the world is awful, or you feel awful about the world. Every Sunday, we get up and we take refuge in things. We take refuge in the Buddha, we take refuge in the Dharma, we take refuge in the Sangha. But that word refuge implies that you are in peril. There is something in the world that is dangerous and awful, and you are taking refuge. And then, so my overarching question for this whole thing is, how do you maintain practice when that awful thing goes away? Because it can go away. You can find yourself in a world that's just okay and groovy. And then, why are we here? Why aren't we outside with our feet in the grass? And like, you know, what am I taking refuge from? And I think there's an answer to that question, and I might be getting close to it, but I don't know what it is exactly. So I'm going to just briefly kind of go over my little story as a launching off point. And so a couple of years ago, I was just in the darkest place one can imagine. Depressed, you know, drinking a lot, life has fallen apart, went from having, you know, six-figure salary and conventionally attractive wife in the house in Orange County, California, and all that kind of stuff, to just nothing. It just all burnt down. Cancer, job loss, you know, things happen. And I found myself in this position of just complete and utter, you know, desolation. And this had been the result of a long process. I started practicing before that, but I started practicing because despite my sort of like material, you know, well-being in the previous, I was always sort of like nagged by this is not right, this is not it, this is not enough. And it kind of, I think that largely comes, you know, Joko Beck talks about people's core beliefs. She says that we all have a core belief that motivates a lot of this negative thinking that we have in our life. And my core belief was, I am not enough. Like, and so no matter what I accomplished, no matter what I gained, it was never enough. You passed the bar exam. Okay, now what? There was no satisfaction in it. It was just, okay, now the next thing. And it, you know, but then I moved to Oregon a couple years ago, and I started practicing here, and I went into the term student program. It was my first stint in the term student program, and I had what I like to describe as an epiphany. I got to this place where the skies opened up. I realized that my own self-loathing was empty, that the universe did not judge me in any meaningful way. And it's something that I thought was going to be just a momentary brainwave, like I had some kind of aneurysm. But it's been a year, almost a year and a half since that happened, and that feeling of self-loathing hasn't come back. But that has had the weird knock-on effect of me wondering what I'm doing here, because that's the only reason I came here, was to get away from that. And I feel like combination of good medication and therapy and Zen meditation, I kind of came through to the other side of it. And I don't know what's motivating me now. And I'm wondering how many of you have a similar sort of experience. But the whole thing for the past year has left me feeling very unmoored, just adrift in my, you know, I just had no basis for what I'm doing in this practice, you know. And so, and it almost makes me personally feel a little bit stupid. Like I don't have the wherewithal to conjure up a clever enough question to keep me going. Like I'm just, you know, Domio will have time for us to go in and talk to her and ask her questions. And I'm just like, what am I going to ask her? Like, I can't even formulate a question. And so I don't know. I feel like it makes me feel like I should have that sort of motivation. There should be something there that's driving me into the practice. Maybe that's a not a good thing to think. But so I went through a bunch of Domio's podcasts. I'm going to summarize some of the things that she recommends to keep one's practice going in these, she calls them ebbs and flows, right? There's times when the practice, your motivation to practice is in, and there's time when the motivation to practice is out, and this could be for any number of reasons. One thing she recommends is regular practice, you know, which I think many of us maintain. I've been very spotty in the past year. I think my little title that I came up with this was how to maintain your motivation when you have the things to do. I've got little doggies, you know. I get up in the morning and they got to go pee-pee, and so I'm okay, I want to sit with Zazen, but now I got to go, and I'll just go do that, and then I come back and they want to eat, so I want to eat, and suddenly you've gone 2 weeks and you haven't sat 1 minute of Zazen at home. And so that's something that Domio says could probably help. She recommends this, Sangha, participation in this, and quite frankly, this is the only reason I'm still practicing Zen at all. If I wasn't a member of this physical place, I would have stopped practicing 9 months ago, easily. And moreover, it's just the fact that I volunteer myself to do things like this that keeps me engaged. Despite my sort of overarching, like, what am I doing here? Well, I'm doing this for this experience, right? This group. She talks about keeping the precepts, but that's a harder one for me to get my head around, because I think most of us do that anyway, kind of automatically. I wonder if anybody comes to this practice and they're just like wantonly lying all the time or something. Like I feel like keeping the precepts, like by the time you find your way to this practice, that almost becomes instinctual, you know. And I've spoken to people in the past, but what are you taking Jukai for if you're already going to be doing that anyway? You know, and again, back to this community. It's like saying, I'm a member of this group. I'm going to get my little thing, and I'm going to do the little ceremony, and then that kind of makes you more into the Sangha. And so Sangha, I think, is definitely something that can help sustain a practice. She mentions living deliberately, and that one is getting closer to the mark, I think, in terms of what might be my personal answer to that question. Because I do have that feeling of just moving through the world in a very sort of conscious and deliberate way that I don't want to lose. And there's a part of me that feels like if I stop practicing, that's going to go away. And there's part of my brain that's like, well, if you stop practicing, your self-loathing is going to come back too, and all these other things that I'm kind of like vaguely afraid of. But I'm that feeling that is so far distant from me now that it's almost not motivating, because it's just in my, it just ceased to exist in a way that makes it no longer super relevant. But that feeling of sort of being active in my world and being present and just walking my dogs with this kind of focus that I don't think I would have if I wasn't practicing. Which kind of brings me to the part where I want to segue into an audio clip. I'm going to play a little audio clip, and I'm going to need the people in the cloud to let me know if this audio clip is coming through. And I realize that I've completely failed in Domino's instructions. She said, while you're talking, make sure that you're looking at the people in the cloud too, because they want to participate, and I've just utterly failed to do that. I just stare off into space when I talk, so sorry.
The other thing is, if I may interject,
sure.
Since you called on us, I don't know if it's just me, but I think you're a little hard to hear. And one of the last things she said to all of us was to use the mic.
Oh, the little amplifier mic?
No,
Am I the only one that has difficulty?
I'm hearing just fine over here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can hear you fine.
This one?
Yeah.
It can't hurt to turn it on, I suppose. How's that? Does that make the situation any better? Cool. I didn't really say anything important anyway in the first half, so you can do it. It doesn't make any difference. But so the last thing that she gets into is she says that one can practice by the practice of unconditional love. And this is something that is very intriguing to me. I don't, is those of you who know me well know that I have a very broad sort of definition about love and who I love in my life and things like that. And so that's something that intrigues me a lot. I don't think that I could explain it any better than Domio can. So I have a 5-minute audio clip of one of her podcasts where she talks about it. And I invite you all to listen in so that we can all discuss afterwards. And I'm going to share my audio, and hopefully this works in the cloud.
It's a good thing we have a Sangha connector to take care of that for us.
Yes, that's me. Give me a thumbs up if y'all can hear this in the cloud.
If we need motivation for practice, though, I think one of the purest and most effective ways is to practice for love. Love has the potential to be a source of powerful, sincere, positive, and unconditional energy for practice without encouraging dualistic thinking, striving, or a subtle rejection of the world. So before I explore what it means to let your practice be motivated by love, I think it's worth saying a few words about why this approach isn't part of the traditional Buddhist teachings. And I don't really know, but I suspect plenty of our Dharma ancestors were actually motivated by love in the way that I'm going to talk about. But Buddhism has always been wary of being motivated by feelings or emotions. This is because our basic feelings, which are attraction, aversion, and indifference, and many of our emotions, anger, longing, jealousy, are self-centered. Even positive emotions like romantic love or feeling pride about accomplishments may be quite self-centered. As long as we're motivated by self-centered emotions, we keep acting out our karma and reinforcing our sense of self and our attachment to self. Self-centered and self-involved love is not ultimately the kind of love I'm talking about as being a powerful and unconditional basis for our practice motivation. I mean, even our love for children or spouse or family members is sometimes far from selfless and unconditional. On the other hand, you might indeed be able to motivate yourself to practice based on love that isn't entirely selfless. If it works, go for it. But the kind of love I'm talking about as an unconditional motivation for practice is deep and wordless. It arises in you when you encounter some aspect of life, independent of thoughts, judgments, or circumstances. The mere encounter brings joy and appreciation. Energy rises out of your belly, courses through your chest, and radiates out from your heart. It may bring tears to your eyes. Deep love is a resonance between your being and something outside of your being. And yet that resonance is a sign of connectedness that proves you are not ultimately separate from whatever it is. Along with this deep love comes gratitude for the existence of that which you love. Regardless of any kind of recognition or special consideration of you on the part of the subject of your love. In this context, you don't matter at all. The subject of your love is precious, beautiful, and worth celebrating unto itself. It is eminently worthy of your devotion. To serve it, to care for it, simply to appreciate it, brings your life meaning and joy. And naturally, we're motivated to practice in order to become better able to serve, care for, perceive, and appreciate the subject of our deep love. Motivation based in this unconditional love is stable and boundless, because as long as the subject of our love is present in the world in any way, even if someday it is reduced to the smallest possible manifestation in some far-off corner of the world, even if someday it is reduced merely to the potential for re-emergence, our love is undiminished.
I don't know about y'all, but that sounds pretty good to me. But I've listened to that clip several times over the course of the past, more than several times over the course of the past 2 weeks, and I don't know that I fully comprehend where Domio's at with that. I know that it sounds like something that I want to explore, so this might be the answer to my question that I'm looking for. But, and the one thing that she does recommend that I'll say before I ask some questions and we go into a breakout room, is that I think that questions like this are really best examined at like a sesshin, which we're having coming up in September, which I'll be attending. And this is the sort of thing I think that one can really dig into. I'll be doing that. I encourage you all to contemplate doing the same, because I think it's really difficult to tackle these questions of motivation and things like that when we're occupied by walking the dogs and all the other little things that we have to do, just, you know, driving cars. I was talking earlier about how much I dislike driving cars, because it just takes you right out of your head and puts you into this frenetic space where you're interacting with things and your feet are moving and your hands are moving. You don't even realize it, but it's really kind of sucked you out of where you are. I would like to go into breakout rooms, but I'm going to do something a little bit unconventional, I think. I hope it's not annoying. But I'm going to read out some questions, and then I'm going to take just 1 minute, because I feel like oftentimes we go to breakout rooms to read these questions, and then we just all dart off, and then have to sort of spontaneously, while we're in front of people, think. So I'm going to just give us like a minute just to think about these questions before we go. And so you might be able to have a little bit of a footing when you go into your group. I mean, and so, of course, the audio clip I just played, I would love to hear what people have to say about that, if there's any thoughts. I would be super interested in hearing what brought people to practice in the first instance. Am I correct in saying that we're all running from something, or am I just making that up? Has anybody else had any sort of like aha moment where you have this just profound moment of realization that just kind of changes the course of everything? Prior to my having one, I didn't think those things existed. I was deeply skeptical, but I guess I found out that I was wrong. And I'd like to hear maybe thoughts about the role that Sangha has played in maintaining your practice. And lastly, have you overcome any obstacles yourself? So take your pick. There's a smorgasbord of little options out there. You know, your motivation, your obstacles you've overcome, moments of realization, anything like that. And I'm just going to invite us to take just 1 minute, and then go into breakout rooms. That's about a minute. That was long enough, I think. So why don't we now jump into breakout rooms online, and you break up into as many groups as you want to. And I sincerely hope that we can bring some of that energy in now, and it doesn't fall off a cliff. So I'm going to open this up to anybody who wants to, you know, ask any questions or tell a story or any old little thing. Where did that energy go? You all just had 30 seconds ago.
Dave, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So early on you had mentioned this notion of refuge and how you kind of like got refuge from your big fear and that like check the box, right? Do you feel like your practice week to week, month to month over the last 9 months, has that checked like smaller boxes? Do you feel, I don't want to like phrase it in terms of progress, but do you feel like maybe on a smaller scale, there are also changes that continue to have an impact on you?
For me personally, not really. Because I think that over 50 years of life, I had grown so accustomed to living in a world that was utterly miserable. Now that I'm not, I don't really feel like anything really matters that much. Like everything is just kind of fine. And I know intellectually that there are probably greater horizons, greater mountains to climb, more to accomplish. But given where that I came from, where I am just kind of leaves me in that sort of lurch where I don't even know what questions to ask now. I just, you know, I'm left sort of like wondering what the next question is. So not really. I've just been kind of existing in the practice and just grooving along and feeling somewhat unsatisfied by that. But enough about me. John, what you got?
Well, Dave, I appreciate you sharing. I mean, really, you opened this up in terms of your own current koan and stuff like that. One of the things I like about Domio is there's a lot that comes across on unconditional love in many different podcasts. And like the clip you said states, it's not so much traditional Zen. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel Domio's made a real connection with unconditional love, and she shares it with us in a variety of ways. And I think it's really important. I know you said enough about you, but I mean, you love your dogs, right? I mean, I don't know if you feel unconditional love for your dogs. They shit on your floor. You still love them, all that kind of stuff. But I don't know how deep you feel it.
I don't love them right at that moment.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, a lot of people are arm's length away from a lot of things. There's a lot that Domio talks about intimacy. And so search your podcast, not just for unconditional love, but also intimacy. One of the things people do is they join a song, everything starts okay. And then they think, hey, I'm fine. And then they leave. And they don't really realize the support that the Sangha provides. And, you know, maybe one of the reasons that you're okay, or that all of us are okay, is because of the Sangha. I mean, you leave that, maybe it's not quite the same. Now, I think everybody has a way-seeking mind. Part of their way-seeking mind is a spiritual thing. But part of it is, you know, what are you going to do with your life? And if you're not totally happy, if anybody's not totally happy, they need to pursue, you know, look for what it is that makes you happy. Bodhisattva vows are kind of important. And I don't know what your connection is to a bodhisattva vow and how much you feel when you say each of the four vows. But there's a lot to be done in the world. You've made a transition that's really helped you. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that you can help. I personally love your, you know, how much you participate on a week to week basis. I enjoy the heck out of your participation in the Sangha. So I personally would miss you, even if you don't know that. So anyway, thank you.
You're going to make me weepy. Looks like Mark's getting up. Take the hot seat.
So, your question about your question about what brought us to practice reminded me of a teaching that I puzzled over a lot some years ago, and it's an old Chinese teaching by Zongmi. And he said that he classified.
Can you have Mark speak into the mic?
And Mark closer to the mic.
I'm it's 3 feet away from my face. Maybe we need to set it omnidirectional?
I don't know. I can turn it around for the moment.
Yeah, that works. How's that? Check, check. All right. So this Chinese master's only classified Zen into five types, right? Completely made up paradigm, but it's useful. I forget the literal translation, but like the first one was practical Zen, right? Like Zen lowers my blood pressure, I yell at my kids less. The second one was essentially mystic Zen, right? Zen connects me to the divine, or things like that. Zen is worship. The third was Zen to save myself from suffering. The fourth was Zen to save others from suffering. And the fifth was Zen for the sake of Zen. And so when I came to practice, I came to practice because I was stressed half out of my mind and I needed to turn it off. So I came to practice with that very ordinary Zen mentality. And after I started to understand Buddhism a bit, there was a save myself from suffering mentality. And now I feel like I'm always going to struggle a bit with the save others from suffering mentality, because who am I to do that? But that leaves Zen for the sake of Zen, right? Zen for the sake of there being Zen in the world. It's not a very personal paycheck, right? But if there wasn't Zen in the world, where would I have gotten it? So that's my thought on motivation.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think I'm stuck on number three, you know.
Saving yourself from suffering.
Either Coral or Carson, one of you has your hand up.
It's me. When I was thinking about epiphanies and breakthroughs, I'm pretty hard on myself about that because I don't feel like I've had very many. But I did my first session in 2019. We were in the midst of wedding planning. This is ironic because our wedding was canceled completely. It never happened. But I was really bent out of shape about all the drama that I was having to deal with as a result of planning a wedding, just in general. Like, parents are angry we're not doing it their way. Friends are mad they can't bring their plus ones. Just like endless crap. And I was so mad about it. And I was having a hard time really just like sinking into session because I was just thinking about all this crap. And I just kind of had this moment, and it seems so simple, of like, oh my God, none of this shit matters. It doesn't matter. And not in a pessimistic way, but in a very much like releasing way. And from that point forward, any time that I spend away from Sangha or meditating, those types of things that don't matter, I start to get like totally wrapped up in them again. Like to the point where it's like taking over my life, and it's just the stupidest stuff. And so that is a motivation, and you know, it takes a little bit of like a moment of recognition of being like, oh, this is taking over again. But that's kind of one of my motivations to keep coming back.
I really resonate with how you described that. And I when I say it, sometimes it sounds pessimistic. When I realize that my self-hatred, my opinion of myself, doesn't matter to anybody in the universe. It doesn't make any difference. And I'm the only one hanging on to it, you know? And then, but it's like saying the universe doesn't care about you sounds kind of negative, but it really isn't. It's very, very liberating, I think, that, you know, you're not under a microscope. You're just not, right? So, yeah, I resonate with that fully. Come on up. You can reintroduce yourself to those who haven't met you yet.
Cool. Hi, I'm Tim. Originally started going here about 10 years ago now. Pretty funny that the topic of conversation is how do you keep going? Because I took a long break, all right? And I tried a bunch of different stuff because I was like, man, am I really just going to sit here my whole life? Like, is that just like what my life is going to be? That sounds boring as fuck, all right? Like, and so I just partied a lot, and I was going to be like a music producer and like all this stuff. And then like recently, like my life was just like falling apart, and like I was living in Boulder, and like I lost like my housing there because I couldn't make enough money. And then I ended up coming back here because it's like, you know, restart place, Portland. And so I ended up coming here today because I was like, well, when's the last time I had my shit together and I felt like something in my life was going correctly, anything whatsoever. And it's here and sitting with other humans intentionally, not for any particular reason, not for a goal, and with, you know, hearing everybody's stories and stuff, realizing, you know, this realization I had today is you never know when the next tragedy is going to hit. It could be tomorrow. You know, your best friend could jump off a balcony and try to kill himself because of a schizophrenic break. It's happened to me last year and didn't know what the hell to do with my life at that point. And I really could have used the stability of Sangha and just being and not necessarily reacting and feeling like I needed to numb out and do something about those feelings, do something with those feelings. So the more that I tried to express those feelings and let them out, the more intense they became and the more they had control over my life. And so just coming back to this place of non-attachment, and, you know, I took Jukai like 7 years ago, and really coming back to the place of like, why do I do this? Because I don't know, life doesn't really seem like it has much of a point. And I need something that helps me be okay with that. Because it can be really depressing. And then I had a moment in the park today where I'm just in my car and I'm like crying because I'm sad because I'm technically unhoused right now. And then I'm like, life is really shitty, and then I'm looking at all the beautiful trees, but it's really beautiful, and then I just start laughing because it's just this hilarious juxtaposition where I can let go of all of the feelings in that moment and just be in that moment and all of the feelings. And so yeah, I keep practicing because of stability and also for the vows of doing it for others. Me getting my life a little bit more together for sure helps the people who look at me get their lives a little bit more together too, and I can help people more in a more stable place. So that's my story for now.
Thank you. Can everybody in the cloud hear me with the microphone turned this way? I'll just leave it like that then. Yeah, that impermanence thing was one that I struggled with, because Domio does bring that up in terms of one of the things that you consider try and bring your motivation back. But for me, it always cut both ways. You know, you never know what's going to befall tomorrow, so you should sit. Or in my mind, you never know when this is all going to go sideways, so I should just go get naked and line a field somewhere under the sun, because I can do that now. You know, and so I am kind of pulled in those two directions. which one's, if the world's going to end tomorrow, which one would I do? Probably the field. So. Any more people want to share their stuff?
Who's in?
Ruth Ann, did you want to interject? Nope, she muted again.
Oh, sure. I don't want to miss a chance. Actually, in our little chat room, Cassie said, oh, she loves a challenge. We always keep learning, or many of us feel that way. And yes, I need a challenge. So just sitting and dealing with the physicality of sitting, even if you're not in a retreat, just the daily fitting that in. And personally, I just find everything about the gathering, the Sangha, the chanting, the format, the talks. And as we finished in the chat rooms and we came back from cloud to the... it sounds like a party. It's lovely. So thank you for the talk.
Thank you, Ruth Ann. How about somebody from the Dirt Zen Dojo? Y'all was talking so much. Somebody's got to have something to say on either the topic of motivation to practice, obstacles overcome, moments of epiphany. What else did I say? Somebody remind me.
Unconditional love.
Unconditional love was in there. Here you go.
Yeah, so this is an interesting question because I don't think I have an answer either. I think I've always been searching, and I think I was a Buddhist before I knew I was a Buddhist because I realized that if I didn't let go of the things I held on to, that things probably wouldn't end very well. And so I, little by little, I just let go of the things that I couldn't control. And somehow Buddhism was the thing I sought, which was very interesting because I really didn't know anything about Buddhism. And I've been searching for my place for years. And I found a Sangha when I lived in Reno for a year that I absolutely loved. It was Pure Land Buddhism, but that doesn't matter. It was awesome. And I've been looking, and I live about a mile away from here, and I never knew this existed until I took an online class through Harvard. And as I was doing Google searches, I found Domio's podcast. And so I loved everything about that podcast. And then she taught in Portland. I'm going, where in Portland does she teach? And it was a mile from my house. So everything just sort of worked out. And I do this for me so that I can be present for others. And I think that's probably the biggest reason.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
So this is nothing we discussed in our group. This is something that came into my head as we've been talking here. I guess in my life, I've always been interested in knowing, I guess, the truth. Like, what is this life all about? Like, what is the fundamental nature of the universe? I don't know that there's an actual answer to these questions, but I think the question itself is... very important. I examine my life, so my place in the universe. One thing that never ceases to amaze me is how full of self-deception I am and delusion. So, motivating thing for me is I want to experience as much of the truth that I can. So to do that, I need to let go of my judgments and my concepts of the world. That needs to fall off in order for me to see clearly.
Thank you. And again, just by you raising that question, I feel like you're capable of a higher order of thinking that I am That level of way-seeking mind, I feel, is a little bit out of my grasp sometimes, but, you know, good on you. Yes, sir.
For me, I guess the question of motivation, I think I find myself with different things motivate me and different factors at different times. I'm reminded of there's a saying, I think it well, it's, which is that if I don't practice for one day, I know. And if I don't practice for 3 days, everyone else knows. And so, you know, I know that if I'm not paying attention or trying to be mindful, then things just kind of get off the, I become difficult to deal with, and I find it difficult coping with all the stuff that's going on around me. And so that will help motivate me, but also, you know, that sort of motivates me to practice for myself. And then there's the bodhisattva vow of practicing for others, to make this practice available to others. And, you know, there's something, what is it? You can't give away what you don't have. And if I want, you know, if I want to try and offer a kind suggestion to someone else, I have to learn to practice being kind to myself. So
that's it. Well put. We have time for one more comment if somebody wants to squeak in. Otherwise, we can call it a day. Yes.
I'm Natalie, for anyone who doesn't know me. So my story of what brought me here, and I'm trying not to break down because there's a lot of emotion behind it. So first I'll say, from the age of 18, I would call myself just someone who is seeking. I just knew there was more than what I was presented with in life and what my parents had taught me. And I grew up in a very high-achieving, competitive environment. In my first year of college, I had kind of an existential crisis and just knew there was more. And so I started studying, you know, a lot of different religions, Eastern religions, and checked out some Buddhist monasteries back then and looked into Hinduism and pagan religions and all sorts of groups. And I did that on and off for years. And then just starting last fall, I had a lot of, I'll say, tragedies take place that brought me to where I am now, really out of just survival. So I lost my best friend to cancer. She had battled cancer for 10 years. That was in October. And then this past February, I lost my daughter to a drug overdose. And then after that, my partner for 7 years, just, he didn't die, but he took off. Couldn't deal with all this. So I feel like my whole life is just, in a huge way, just completely changed and trying to make sense of it. And so suffering for me, suffering, grief has been huge. So just trying to find something to ground, to stabilize. So I have that piece of trying to alleviate the suffering, but also I would say that mysticism element is big for me too, of the feeling that there's more than what we see here, and tapping into that, and, you know, trying to understand, find truth in the light of these recent events, but also even before that, I already had that. But I also feel being here, I have more to do here, and I feel this need to serve my community. So I think that other piece comes in for me too, of wanting to do it for others, and that the love as well. So that's my story.
Thank you very much. Yep. That was a powerful reminder of what brought many of us here in the first place. So I appreciate that. And I think that brings us to an end. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. See y'all next time.